Welcome back, DGS on KMOX. Few minutes past 4 p.m. Every Tuesday, we get together with a couple of our friends, talk about politics or current events. Today, we have Steve Ellman, the Emperor of St. Charles County. We have our buddy Jeff Smith. So let's start out with Hunter. And we had Brad Smith on. No, Brad Smith?
Brad Young.
Brad Young, too many Smiths, who is an attorney and a great commentator. And here's what he had to say. He said, nothing to see here. There's nothing to see here legally. A U.S. citizen made a bad decision and was tried and convicted. Nothing to see here politically because the Bidens took it like champs and they didn't lash out or say rigged or anything. And so according to his expert opinion, which I tend to agree with, it's unless your last name is Biden or you're a friend of the family, there's not a lot to see. As opposed to had he been acquitted, then all hell would have, you know, the poop would have hit the fan. Thoughts?
Amen.
Yeah.
Hey, I mean, you know, I love my friend Steve. We've known each other for a long time. You're a Republican, I'm a Democrat, but we see a really stark divide here in how the two parties are kind of handling the rule of law in this country. You know, the Democrats are honoring the system even when it hits as close to home as your own kid. And I think that's really the patriotic way to behave.
I agree with that.
You know, supporting law and order is doing so not just when it's easy, when it's happening to the other guy, but doing it when it's happening to your own team, when it's hard. And so, you know, I think it's the right call for President Biden. And I appreciate the very difficult situation he's in. And, you know, a lot of people, even Republicans, would say, hey, he's just trying to buy a gun. What's the big deal? A Second Amendment, right? But Biden isn't trying to get off on a technicality, didn't do a pardon in advance in the way that Trump did with Manafort and, you know, his other campaign people affiliated with his campaign. So I think it's incredibly patriotic the way he's handling it.
So far, so good. The really tough part now is the sentencing, because in both cases, these are first time offenders. But really be real interesting to see if they get what first-time offenders usually get or if they get a little extra or a little less.
Yeah, so, you know, one thought I have on that, something that was kind of personal to me when I went through my sentencing is that, you know, my attorney was very much focused on making sure, he basically said, look, like, you can't say a word, okay? Don't say a word in public, you know, accept total contrition. And he said, what we'd advise, if you want to say anything at all, you know, you can write like a op-ed and just say you're sorry. And so I did. I wrote an op-ed and I said, look, I'm sorry to my constituents because of what I did involving a campaign postcard 20 years ago now. And I said, I'm sorry to my constituents. I'm sorry to my family. I'm sorry to my colleagues. I'm sorry to the institution of the Senate. That we share, that we both honor, that I dishonored. And I said, I'm sorry to Russ Carnahan, who was my opponent in that race. And the prosecutor stood up at sentencing and he said, he has shown a total lack of contrition. And that's another reason why he's got to go to prison, you know, for as long as possible. So prosecutors, I'm saying that in service of a larger point. Prosecutors are pretty sensitive to whether or not you show contrition or you say, screw the system. And you really couldn't be showing, it's not possible to show less contrition or take less responsibility than President Trump has, right? And so that may weigh in when the judge does his sentencing.
It may. And, you know, prosecutors are interesting. When I was a judge, I had one prosecutor. I had two different guys, and they were both good at prosecuting. But one of them, when it came to sentencing, he wanted to hang everybody, okay, which was no help to me. The other one, would give me hints about, okay, this person really, really, really needs to be hung. And this other guy, if you want to, you know, give him some mercy. So a good prosecutor doesn't do what yours did, Senator. He helps the judge understand his.
Was that the hardest part of the job?
Yeah, that's the hardest part of the job by far. It's the part of the job I hated the most and the reason I got out after three years.
Really?
Yeah, I just got tired of sentencing people, and you know, you read the pre-sentence investigations in most cases, and you realize, boy, this person really didn't have much a chance with the family he came from and his situation. But he got his three strikes, and now it's time for him to go to prison. You got to decide whether it's 7 years or 17 years.
Yeah. Jeff, you've told your story many times before in writing and here on the show, but walk me through it again a little bit as far as the emotion. Like when you know you're facing something, you don't know what you're facing, and then you find out what it is, just what was it like?
Yeah, so it's obviously really difficult on your family. You know, I remember when I found out that my then best friend was wearing a wire, I just drove straight to my parents' house. It was the first thing I did and said, look, I need you guys to sit down. And I told them, you know, I made a mistake 5 years before, 4 years and 11 months before, because the statute of limitations was 5 years and they got me just before. And I said, I made a stupid mistake and I'm probably going to have to go to prison. And my dad, my mom, her response was, how many times did I tell you not to go into politics? My dad just said, you know, what do you need? You know, do you have an attorney? Do you need help? You know, and, you know, I know this might sound cliched and it might sound hyperbolic, but I like watched them age before my eyes.
Tough.
You know, you could just see how hard it was on them. Came from a middle class family. They, you know, went to college, went to graduate school, was a college professor, ran for office. It was not anything they ever would have dreamed their son would have come to tell them. And, you know, so it was like a real punch in the gut for them. A few minutes after, it was a punch in the gut, you know, for me to find out about the wiretap. So at that point, I sublimated all emotion, I think, and just said, what do I need to do to move past this? Well, the first thing I need to do is to, you know, just start thinking, what can I do after I get out of prison? And try to stay focused on, hey, this is going to suck, but it's not the end of my life. I'm 35 years old and I got a long way to go. And to paraphrase something Churchill once said, you know, this will be a chapter of my life, but I'm not going to let it be the defining chapter, you know, of my life. And so I tried to look ahead, but, you know, prison was educational for me. It sucked. It was the worst year of my life, but I had a window into a part of American society that I never would have otherwise seen in that way. And in a weird way, I'm grateful for that, because not many people that have the background that I have and have access to the policy process and to be able to try to make changes in the process have seen the system from the inside in the way I did. So, you know, maybe, you know, it sounds like Hunter might have to go. We'll see what happens. But I think he's already shown that he's tried to use his experience with addiction for a positive by writing about it and helping other people see the struggles he went through and hopefully be inspired by that.
Does it make you?
I don't remember all the facts about your case, but I do remember feeling at the time that once you were convicted or pled guilty, that you were treat it a lot differently than most first-time offenders because of your position. Did you feel that way? And that's, of course, what you know what could happen in the Trump case or in the a Biden case. I mean, I just hope they get the same treatment that other first-time offenders would get, and I'm not sure you did.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we petitioned to have. I had co-founded a charter school. Years before that. And my petition to the court was to have me teach for 2 years for no salary and coach basketball and then be confined to my home outside of the workday. Mm-hmm. So just teach, coach, and then go home and be on an ankle bracelet. Basically, you know, when I wasn't. So that would have saved taxpayers like a couple $100,000, right? And so we thought, hey, this would be a good option. That's what I thought could have been an appropriate sentence. It wasn't what I got. And, you know, I don't know exactly why that was, but I'm not going to complain because, you know, a lot of people have gotten a lot worse treatment than I did. I agree with you, Steve, that I just want to see Hunter and President Trump get the same type of sentence that an average person would get in the same situation that's conducted themselves in the exact same way. I think that's what we should all want. And I think that, honestly, probably neither one of them would be in this position if they weren't who they were.
I agree. I think most people would agree on that.
I think
that.
We're all in agreement on that. Jeff, does it have an effect on you when people say things, which is so cliche now, like, well, he's not going to real prison. It's some sort of country club where they make cupcakes and they play cricket. Does that get to you?
That does irritate me a little bit. Rachel has a great show on here on KMOX, which is awesome. What time is your show on, Rachel?
It's on Saturdays at 7 a.m.
Saturdays at 7 a.m.
Yes.
Okay, so for the early risers on the weekend who get your workouts in early, go listen to Rachel's show. Rachel was kind enough to have me on one of her first shows to kind of share my story. And the answer to your question, sorry, I digress.
It's okay.
What was the question again?
About whether it bothers you when people say country club atmosphere.
So I talked with Rachel in depth about what it's like being in prison. And as I explained to her, there's no such thing in America today as a country club prison. In the 80s, for a while, there was a prison where a lot of people from Wall Street went to that I did some research when I was writing my book about my time in prison. And there was one prison that was seen as kind of country club-ish, and a lot of people went there, and they had tennis courts and so on and so forth. And then there was like an expose about that on like 60 Minutes. And then, of course, the Bureau of Prisons was like, we got to shut that down. So by the time it was time for sentencing for me, I just said, look, I've had some bad luck. I mean, I made some stupid choices, but that was probably compounded by some bad luck involving a car bomb that I had nothing to do with. But that the person who did the campaign postcard in my case, then got convicted of trying to car bomb his ex-wife's divorce lawyer. And that's what led them to my friend, which led them to me. So this is kind of a crazy stream of circumstances that led him to that. But the point I'm making is that by that point, when I was being sentenced, there was no country club prison left in America. I was ended up in a place in Southeast Kentucky that was 99% drug dealers. Most of them had gotten 15-year sentences. I had the second shortest sentence of anybody in that entire facility. And so I had a year and a day. And so, look, if Hunter has to go to prison, he's going to go to a prison with mostly federal drug offenders is who's going to be there. That's a big percentage of the people we lock up in the federal system are drug offenders. So it's going to be not your people who sell a little bit of drugs, but your people who get high enough in the system that they control Owensboro, Kentucky's drug trade, or they're kind of one of the kingpins in a medium-sized town or city, and so they're big enough for the feds to want to go after them, as opposed to a state drug charge. Those are a plurality of people who are in federal prison, and that's probably who will make up the plurality of the people Hunter does time with if he gets done.
Obviously, one of the worst years of your life. Did you walk away from it thinking that the prison system, and yours in particular, was inhumane? Or just not a great place to be?
Look, I mean, there's certain things about U.S. prisons, I think, that are like inherently not humane, that are different from how other industrialized democracies do prison. When you go into prison in the United States, you get strip searched, you get stripped of your name and you're given a number, and those things, and you don't go in with anything. And in a Western European prison, you go in and you take a suitcase with your clothes and they search it to make sure there's not drugs or anything illegal in there. But you get to like wear your own clothes. You get called by your name. You're not dehumanized and given a number. There's just elements of it, the way that we do prison, that I think are unnecessarily dehumanizing. And as Steve can attest, based on his experience as a judge, we're mostly dealing with people that already are pretty severely traumatized from events that happened in their childhood, which is usually what kind of leads them, to justice involvement. So it can be really dehumanizing, aspects of it, but you can find ways to keep your humanity. And I think prisoners do, in my experience. They build friendships with each other. They play sports. They take pride in their work. I worked on a loading dock in the warehouse, and the guys that I worked with, there were six guys. The picture of the seven of us is together on on the back of my book and on my Twitter bio. And we worked our butts off 40 hours a week inside of a huge freezer, unloading, 100-pound bags of rice, beans, flour, sugar, 80-pound boxes of meat. We took pride in our work. Hmm. And I think a lot of people in prison do that. Some of them take the time to better themselves. They do programming. They go to classes. They try to learn a skill or a trade so they can improve. And we need more of that in our prisons because that's what they do in Western Europe. They help teach you a trade so that when you go back, you're in a better condition than you were when you came.
I always appreciate
if your day sounds like
we need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo if you've persevered through. You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame,
two more.
You deserve this ice cold reward. Modelo, the remarkable fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
You talked about that. Welcome back, guys. DGS, Steve Ellman and Jeff Smith. Jeff has been kind enough once again to kind of talk about what he went through when he had to go to prison for a year and a day. And he wanted to make a point about, I asked why we don't make more sweeping changes in the U.S. if we know better. And he wanted to talk about that and the recidivism rate.
Well, I just want to say that in countries where they're focused more on how do we help people heal while they're incarcerated and then do better when they come out so that we don't have to keep paying for them to come back over and over and over again? Places like I described where they give like more vocational training and just, I think, treat people broadly with more humanity, like in Denmark, the recidivism rate is in the teens, the mid-teens, whereas our recidivism rate, the lifetime recidivism rate is like around 70%, right? And so we're not doing it very well. And I just think we shouldn't have such a punitive impulse with our system. We need to be more pragmatic about what works, not just trying to punish people, but like, hey, you screwed up. You're already being punished by being here. But what can we do to help you not hurt people again when you go back out?
Did you feel the same way when you were sentencing people as a judge?
Somewhat. Yeah. I, like I said, you look at the, you look at their record and you realize that it's time for them to go to prison. So for how long? Mm-hmm. And they have programs where you could go for 120 days and come back. That was used. But if that didn't work, eventually you just have to send them to prison. I think we can also do a much better job of dealing with these folks when they get out. And I know you worked for a while with some organizations that, that have worked on that. And I'm not sure. I know they've had a history now. Are they doing any better in St. Louis here?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's several reentry agencies that are working in St. Louis that help people when they come home. You referenced Concordance. There's also Keyway, which works exclusively with women coming home. There's Criminal Justice Ministry, which works with men. It typically works with, I think, works with oftentimes older men, men in their 40s. And so there's several different agencies that are working on this problem, but it's all a drop in the bucket compared to the need out there. For anybody out there, if you're interested in mentoring someone who's coming out of prison, helping with like job coaching them or even employing them, then feel free to get in touch with me, jeffsmith2006@gmail.com, and I can hook you up.
Very good. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it. Thanks, Steve.
You bet.